This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And you can call me the last of the red hot book lovers, because I am so excited always when I get a great book. And today I'm really thrilled because I get to talk about England. And my guest is Clara McKenna, and the name of her book is Murder on Mistletoe Lane. And it is the fifth book in her Stella and Lindy mystery series. I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Clara.
Thanks for having me.
Wow. Well, you know, this is just perfect for me because I always love talking to anybody who loves England as much as I do. And I think you certainly do.
Oh, I'm sure I do. It sounds like you're as much an Anglophile as I am. So, yeah, we're kindred spirits, Patsy.
Absolutely. And this is just the right time of the year to read about England. And of course, this is set in Edwardian England, which is one of my favorite periods. So tell us about this series. And then we're going to talk about our love of England and spending Christmas in England. Because I don't know if you realize that when I was 11 years old, I told my parents, and I'm from Northern Michigan, in the middle of nowhere, but I told my parents, I'm moving to England, and I'm going to live near where Jane Austen was born. Now, I was 11. I started working and saving my money, and when I was 21 years old, I bought a house in England.
So, oh, wow.
Now, that shows you. So, and I actually did a lot of Thanksgivings in England teaching our British friends a little bit about America. So this book is perfect. So tell us about Stella and about, you know, she's come a long way since book one.
She has. And it's funny, before I get to Stella, I just want to say, I started when I was 10. I told my mom I wanted to go to England. And when I was 17, I went. But
wow.
But I didn't buy a house. So you got one up on me for that. So let me tell you a little bit about Stella. Stella Kendrick is an American heiress from Kentucky. And she's the daughter of a Kentucky horse breeder who has made his money selling thoroughbred racehorses. But he's an ambitious man. And at this time in 1905, the only way to get to the highest echelon of American society was to get a British title if you're new money. So he decided that he's going to sell off Stella, like one of his racehorses, to an impoverished British nobility, you know, noble family. And so he tells her she's going to England for a wedding, only to find out she's the bride.
I love that. When I read that one, I thought that was so wonderful.
So luckily, though, not luckily for the vicar, but the vicar dies, right, in the first book. And but because he dies, Lindy, who is the Viscount, is her betrothed. Stella and Lindy get to know each other a little bit better before they have to plunge into this wedding, which neither one of them is really that thrilled about. But then when they get to know each other, they realize, they're not so bad after all. And so eventually, over the series, they do get to know each other, and they actually fall in love. And so, not to give a spoiler alert, but the fifth book that we're talking about, Murder on Mistletoe Lane, is their first Christmas together at their country estate in the New Forest region of England, which is in Hampshire. So it gives you a little bit of an overview of the series.
Well, it is a fun series, and I know that, you know, one of the things, of course, the joy of doing a historical series is that you just get to jump into the history and do the research, which is as much fun as writing the book.
It is, absolutely. I totally agree. A lot of people ask me, well, why did you set your books in England? And I was like, duh, I get to go to England to do the research, right?
Yes, it's tax deductible.
It's tax deductible. Well, I would have done it for free. So that's awesome.
Too. Yeah. Me too. But so your love of England is so much like mine. And there is something when you get there and when you're doing this research, and I spent a lot of time in the reading room at the British Museum. That's where my research was done. Uh-huh. Now they've closed it down. The terrible, I can't even talk about it. It upsets me so much. But so when you went at 17, so what brought you there and what happened to all of this excitement that you felt when you got there?
Well, what was really interesting, and I was telling this to my my agent, and that's kind of the impetus for the series in the first place, is I had spent so many years dreaming about England and reading about England, and we have so much shared history that when I got there at 17, I thought I would just kind of slip into the culture and the country and the whole atmosphere like a glove, you know? And it turned out that I had major cultural shock. Things were really different than I expected, to the point where I almost got, you know, hit by a double-decker bus because I was looking the wrong way, you know? And so I had that kind of fish out of water experience, even though when I went there, I was visiting a cousin who had married a woman from London. And so I spent time with them, had my first proper cup of tea. But it was still an experience that kind of stuck with me, like, wow, there's some real differences here. And then when I became a writer and I wanted to set this series in England, I realized I really need to have an American experience that culture difference. That would be a lot of conflict and a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. It is a lot of fun. And as I said, because I bought a house there, and so I'm living in England and making friends. And of course, one of the things that I introduced them to was Thanksgiving and an American style Christmas, because it is different.
Right. It is.
I remember when I was little, the first time I read about Boxing Day, my great uncle was a boxer and a wrestler. And so I thought, why do these people want to go on a box on Boxing Day?
Why do they have a whole day just for, you know, the pugilists of this world, right?
I remember that. It was so funny.
I thought the same thing.
So I did. When you started writing, and of course you're doing the research, what did you discover? Some of the fun things that you discovered that were culture shock for Stella, as they were for us.
Well, your experience is probably more in depth than mine because you actually get to live there and be really immersed. But my research kind of came up with especially because it was the noble family, so it wasn't just kind of the regular middle class, working class. But a lot of it was a formality. You know, there's a lot of rules that you had to follow. At this time, chaperones were considered kind of passé in America. Like, come on, they're adults. We want them to get married. Women can be with men without a chaperone on a walk and that sort of thing. Where in England, it was still very, very strict. The things like the royalty, that was a concept that I didn't quite understand the depth of how that infiltrates into to society, especially at that aristocratic level. And where Stella is kind of like, why do you, what's the big deal here? even on their honeymoon, they get an invitation to go someplace by the daughter of Queen Victoria, and they had plans. And Stella's like, we have plans. And Lindy's like, no, we don't say no to Princess Beatrice. I'm sorry. And that's just something she doesn't understand, you know? Even if the President of the United States called you, you'd be like, yeah, well, I've got my daughter's doing this soccer game. You know, I can't miss that. So, just little subtle things that I think, of course, the food, there's some foodish differences, especially at Christmas time. That was a fun thing. I got to, kind of explore like the different, like one thing I always found in my research of American historical Christmases was the use of popcorn, you know, where you decorate Christmas trees with popcorn strings. And even, you know, everyone would do that. Everyone from working class up to, like, I have something where Mark Twain had some on his Christmas tree at one point. So in America, I mean, in Britain, they would never have popcorn on the Christmas tree. So, you know, and they would have, you know, the Yule log was a really new, a different concept in Britain where we don't celebrate that here. So it was just a lot of subtle things, I think, more than kind of in your face, but I don't know, but I just kind of try to bring it out as much as I could with Stella. Of course, with a mystery, and that was one thing with Stella, is she's always asking questions. And that is, especially for Lindy's mother, who's the Countess of Atherley, she finds that very, I don't want to say rude, but that was probably the word she would use. Just like, you don't ask people these really personal questions. So, but Stella has to, especially to solve murders, but she's just naturally curious and asks them anyway.
Well, and it's funny, they just sort of look and they say American. Like that
explains
everything.
Exactly. Yeah, so, right. Stella gets so sick of being called the American, you know, it's like, yeah, okay.
I'm brash. Yeah, I know. It was so funny. And introducing them to some American foods and, of course, getting used to their foods. And one of the things I don't know, it always scared me. I don't like Christmas crackers. I know something about them gives me the creeps.
You don't like fireworks in your living room, right?
No, I don't. I don't. I never liked that. Now, you know, of course, doing the research, you went to Fortnum and Mason. You went to Harrods. What are some of the things that you found out about the food?
Oh, about the food? Like at Christmas time or just in general?
In general.
Well, I think the food's somewhat similar at the high end of, especially in this era, things that the American elite and the nobility in England, a lot of times they were eating very similarly rich foods. But a little subtle things like Stella would add bourbon to things because they're from Kentucky, so you might have like bourbon in your fruitcake, or you might have a lot more like things that are just unique to America, like pecan pie or... Well, like I said, or corn, things like that. But I would say in some ways they're very similar at that era, at that level of society. Because the French had a lot of influence in what the upper class were eating. And so a lot of people, even America, were eating the French cuisine.
Now, of course, when you were there, you did visit Fortnum and Mason and Harrods, right?
No, I went to the New Forest, right. I went to the New Forest.
Oh, you went to the New Forest, yeah.
New Forest, yeah. That's where the books are set, are in the New Forest. So I spent lots of time.
That is a lovely area. That is a beautiful area. Now,
it is.
With your, when you were, you know, getting, as a young girl, reading books from England, who were your favorite authors? Were you on the Jane Austen side, the Charlotte Bronte side? What authors influenced you?
Yes. I read them all. I read everything I could get my hands on. So yeah, I loved the Brontes. I loved George Eliot. I loved Jane Austen. Everything I could get my hands on, actually, that was that era. Yeah.
And then, of course, when you're interested in writing a mystery, Agatha Christie had to play a part in it, because one of the wonderful things about your books, you have great plotting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's the master, of course. Everybody aspires to Agatha Christie when it comes to plotting. I've read almost all of her books. I'm slowly working through them from the beginning to the end to kind of see how she progresses and hit the few that I haven't read. but I discovered her, I would say, actually in high school, though I had already read Sherlock Holmes. That was one of my early books that you were talking about, what I read in England. And I, at 8 years old, I read Hound of the Baskervilles, and my mom found out and said, oh, that's kind of scary, isn't it, for an eight-year-old? But Agatha Christie definitely is the master of plotting, and you can't, like you said, you can't be a mystery writer almost without at least having a real deep appreciation for her craft. She's amazing.
And the nice thing, it's not just her mysteries, but even her other series, like the Tommy and Tuppence one, where she introduces humor and that that relationship between a couple, which I really appreciate. I love those books because I always felt that she had it just right, the relationship. And here we have, talk a little bit about Lindy, because, you know, he plays an important part here in these stories.
He was the
bridegroom the bridegroom who came out of nowhere.
Right. So Lindy, of course, is duty bound to marry somebody and to produce an heir, because he is the the heir. He's the oldest son and the only son. He has a younger sister, but he's the only boy, and it's on his head to keep Mornington Hall in the family. And he's a little bit of a playboy, and when he meets Stella, he's very haughty, very arrogant. He doesn't like his mother. He's not a mama's boy in any way. They buck heads all the time. And so he's constantly looking for something to do again, kind of rebel against his mom. So he's always looking for something different. And so, of course, when Stella shows up, and she's very different, of course, he likes the way she looks. She's a very pretty lady, but she's spunky and she's different. And he really embraces that American, her American ways. And especially since his mom doesn't like her, right? At first, it's like, well, okay, I'll like her because my mom doesn't like her. But then he realizes that she's just a really decent person, and he's never met anyone like her before. So he actually, as he falls in love with her, he realizes he needs to step up his game and become a better person to deserve her. So in the beginning, I had written Lindy as a bad guy, basically. In the first proposal of the series, he was supposed to be the victim that Stella disliked so much that when he was murdered, they all would suspect that she had done it. And I had an editor suggest that, well, no, maybe you should make them co-detectives. And so that kind of had to make Lindy be, he had to step up and be a better person. He loves his horses. He's a betting man. He wants to build up his stables at at Mornington Hall. And that's another thing that he and Stella bond over, because they're both, they both love horses.
And apparently, do you love horses? Because you write about them very nicely.
Oh, thank you. I'm not a big horse person. I admire horses. I wanted one when I was I wanted a pony when I was a little girl. And I did ride when I was younger, but it was one of those dreams that kind of, went by the wayside, because I lived in cities and then I moved around a lot as an adult. And so this was kind of a way to get back to that childhood enthusiasm. But when I started researching the series, I had to get back up on the saddle for the first time in like 30 years. So, yeah.
Well, one of the characters, of course, is the mother-in-law. And I love the mother-in-law. It's always so much fun to write the mother-in-law section, because it's like from Dorothy Sayers and Lord Peter Wimsey. And you have, of course, Lord Peter Wimsey's mother, the Dowager Duchess. And, she just opens up all these wonderful possibilities for Dorothy Sayers. And of course, Lady Atherley does that for you.
Yes. Yes, she does. Because she's always the one that, if everything else is smooth sailing, you can rely on Lady Atherley to throw a wrench in things, right? So Stella has to learn to navigate. If she's going to learn to navigate the British society and her role as Lady Lyndhurst, she's got to win over her mother-in-law first, and she's the best test of that. And then, of course, when it comes to providing an heir that is also something that Lady Atherley is going to be very insistent upon and nosy about. And yeah, she just gets into everybody's face about everything. And I really like her. Some people can't stand her. She's too much, but I think she's great.
Well, I think she is too. And a wonderful character. And there's so much you can bounce off of her, you know, yeah. So it's great. Well, I think the Stella and Lindy mystery series is fantastic. I think you've done a beautiful job with it. I'm sure you're working on book six already.
Book six is almost done. I've got 3 weeks until I turn on the final manuscript. So, yeah.
Well, you've done so well with the series. And I know that it was Murder at Key Haven Castle that was selected by Suspense Magazine as the best cozy mystery in 2021. Something that was nice. And of course, I think that it's just so exciting when somebody throws himself into a period and then does that research. And that's right now I've been talking to, I have 9 of my listeners are doing NaNoWriMo this month.
Oh, and yes.
It's, you know, these are people who, most of them, they went through the pandemic dreaming about writing, but they didn't do anything. And finally, right. This year, they said, what did I do? I missed my opportunity. So they're doing it again. You know, they're doing it this year. And I think that's so wonderful. And they'll learn so much from, you know, just taking that leap into writing. And you certainly have done it in a big way.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I tried I can't even say it. I tried that. I always say it wrong. During the pandemic myself. And I got about 5,000 words in and went, okay, I can't do this. This is not the way I work.
I know. But, for people who are doubting themselves at all that they can even write 1,000 words, I mean, people haven't, you know, they haven't. It doesn't matter.
It's a great challenge.
50,000. It matters that you try.
Yes. Absolutely. Just start. Just write.
Start. Because you're not going to be a member of Sisters in Crime unless you do start.
That's right.
And I understand you're a founding member of Sleuths in Time. And what is that?
Sleuths in Time, we're a group of women who all write historical mysteries that we kind of support and promote each other's work. So we support each other and we promote each other's work, and we have a presence on Facebook, and we have a newsletter, and we tell our readers about all things history and all things mystery. And we like to read mysteries and historical mysteries as much as we like to write them. So it's all about writing and reading historical mysteries.
Well, I think it's a fantastic idea. And so how can people follow you and find you?
Well, my website is just claramckenna.com. That's probably the best way to track me down. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook.
And I'm sure people can find a link to your Sleuths in Crime on your webpage, right? Sleuths in Time. Well, I think it's a fantastic idea because writers need to help other writers, and they certainly do, especially cozy mystery writers. I think they're all so great. And a special thanks today to everyone at Kensington. And I love the cover, as always, Kensington. Captures the feeling of a book, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I love my fabulous covers. And the Murder on Mistletoe Lane, a lot of people even said it kind of evokes the all creatures great and small, how they do that on, you know, it just has that feeling of just being there. It just puts you in the place and the time. And yeah, it's a wonderful covers. Wonderful covers. I love them.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper, and we'll be back when you you get the next one out, and it's always so exciting. I wanted to mention, really, when it comes to plotting, you are just so good at it, and there are enough twists and turns in there to keep people excited. A wonderful read for this holiday season, and a wonderful gift book also.
Yeah, and I wrote it as a standalone too. So if you wanted to just start with Murder at Mistletoe Lane, And you can just do that, or if you, like you said, if you want to gift it to somebody who's a mystery lover in your life, it's a good idea. And thank you very much for the compliment about the plotting. That's so nice.
Well, I realize that if the plotting is just right, it carries you through that book and you get so excited. And that certainly happened with Murder on Mistletoe. I love it. Mistletoe Lane.
It's a mouthful.
I really was excited about it. And again, thank you for joining me today. It's been wonderful talking to you. And I'll have you back. You make sure you let me know when your next release is out, okay?
Great. Thank you very much. I will do. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay, we're going to play a book buzz from Devon Miller. And this is one in time for Christmas. And it's really a cool book. You'll love it.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The holiday season is upon us, so of course you'll soon start hearing Santa's sleigh bells all around. Hopefully it's Santa the one taking the reins and not our good friend, the pigeon. Yes, the pigeon is back, and this time he doesn't want to drive the bus, but he wants to drive the sleigh. The Pigeon is one of the characters created by children's author and illustrator Mo Willems. The Pigeon makes a return in the book, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Sleigh, written and illustrated by Mo Willems. The Pigeon has made his list and checked it once, and it seems that all he wants this holiday season is to drive Santa's sleigh. Can his holiday dream come true? Readers are sure to have some holiday laughs and cheers when they pick up a copy of this book, and of course, it makes a great stocking stuffer for children. Just remember, when you read the book, don't let the pigeon drive the sleigh. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. I'm going to talk for a few minutes, and then I'm going to play a very special song. It is music that just is on a special day. I want to play it for you. And one of the reasons I play this song every year is, one, it's very dear to my heart. But also, I think every once in a while, we just have to stop and listen to quiet music and dream our dreams and say our prayers and think about what we can do to be kind to other people and to do good in this world. The world is not, it's not very much fun at the moment. There are many problems, but we can hope that people will find some way to start thinking I don't know, how to be better people and how to make this world a better place. One of the things I want to remind everybody is we've been running a wonderful promo for National Geographic magazine here in November, because on Joy on Paper, November is National Geographic Month. And I'm just asking all of you to, especially for your children in your life, whether you have, children directly in your life, or if you don't, for children in a hospital, buy a Nat Geo book. Give them that joy of reading. As I mentioned at the top of the program, people are calling me the last of the red hot book lovers. And as you listened to this interview, you heard that Clara McKenna was reading when she was very young. And one of the things that is making me very sad is that young children are not reading enough, because that is where your brain will develop and you will just go into another world with, especially with books from Nat Geo. So give a gift of love and give a gift of Nat Geo during this holiday season. When you go to for Thanksgiving, bring a Nat Geo book with you. And now I want to play this song because it's very special to me. And I want to just thank everybody for all of their lovely emails, and especially to all my nine. I'm thinking of them as nine dolls who are now writing NaNoWriMo. And we're going to go and play this wonderful song by Mozart. Thank you.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 106.1